Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
Well, as always, it's good to be with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science. Nanotechnology, open innovation, all of it, right here on the Science News Radio Network. Today we've got a fun show. We have in the first half hour, Dr. Fahmida Chaudhuri. She's with the National Science Foundation. She's going to give us tips on how you can get funding if you've got a new science project that you think can go commercial. The National Science Foundation is very interested, and she'll tell you how to walk through that. And also, she's a keynote speaker at the IEEE Green Technology Conference. It's going on in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, on the 14th and 15th of April, coming up pretty soon. We're going to have more about that on this program pretty regularly leading up to the conference. And, of course, today we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our fountain of useless information we have here on the set in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But before we get to today's guest, there's a lot of exciting news happening in the world of science. We want to step over here into our very active world newsroom and see what's going on and hear from our correspondents. Well, right now, you know, that climate change conference is going on in Cancun, Mexico. We've covered a little bit of that here, but it is happening right now. And in contrast to last year's Copenhagen meeting, this year's United Nations meeting on climate change has all but gone unnoticed. Al Gore told Reuters, he says, "I'm a little depressed about Cancun. The problem is not going away. It's getting steadily worse," said Al Gore. The Economist, meanwhile, has said that global action is not going to stop climate change. The Economist says the world needs to look harder at how to live with it. And meanwhile, Jonathan Leake of the Sunday Times says the government's chief scientist has dismissed hopes for a deal at this week's United Nations Climate Change Conference. He said Britain should start preparing for a warmer world, said Jonathan Leake of the Sunday Times, of course. And Margaret Went of the Globe says, mercifully, no one will pay much attention to the Climate Change Conference in Cancun, where a much reduced group of delegates will go through the motions. She says the delusional dream of global action, that's a quote, delusional dream of global action to combat climate change is dead. That's Margaret Went, The Globe. And on the one benefit of the meeting in Cancun, according to the Washington Times, is the climate conference is going to avoid the embarrassment last year when the Copenhagen meeting ended in an unexpected blizzard. It's harder to sell global warming to world leaders who have to flee the city before their flights are grounded in an ice storm, says the Times. The worst the Cancun conference will have to deal with is the threat of being kidnapped by heavily armed gangs of drug dealers. And, of course, we also covered that on this program a few weeks back also about the safety of being in Cancun. And you might remember that back in March of 2000, The Independent reported that snow is starting to disappear from our lives. According to Dr. David Vinner, then, a senior research scientist at the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia, I guess the University of East Anglia, you might remember, is where ClimateGate took place. That's where the faked emails were discovered in the climate change debate. And he said within a few years, winter snowfall will become a very rare and exciting event. That was in the year 2000. Within a few years, winter snowfall in Britain will become a very rare and exciting event, he said. Okay, well, right now, of course, you know, Britain is shivering in record-breaking cold weather, despite data from their off their weather forecasting office that they could be in for an unusually dry and mild winter. An entire island of England and Wales and Ireland and Scotland. What have I forgotten here? Is covered in snow. You can see it from space. Well, one solution for climate change, according to one of the Greenpeace people that is visiting the conference in Cancun, is that we should all stop eating meat.
If we mitigate the dangerous gases like methane, we can slow down global warming and we can work on green technologies then, and we buy ourselves more time. But we have to work on these dangerous short-lived gases first before we start concentrating on the others. And this is an issue that can be addressed easily by people changing their diet.
That was a lady by the name of Ruth Standard with Greenpeace. She was speaking to the New Tang Dynasty Television, NTD Television. They're an independent nonprofit television broadcasting association established about 8 or 9 years ago, headquartered in New York. They've got reporters and correspondents in over 70 cities worldwide. And meantime, Arianna Huffington's Huffington Post is saying that even if we stop spewing global warming gases today, the world would still face a steady rise in food prices this century. But on our current emissions path, climate change becomes the threat multiplier, she reports, that could double grain prices by the year 2050. And despite all the talk to the contrary, the president of Mexico, Felipe Calderón, had a lot of positive things to say when he spoke at the conference.
It is perfectly possible to reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases and at the same time not only sustain economic growth, but also find new ways of productivity and of growth and of job creation in green growth and development in sustainable development.
Translation provided by NTD Television. All right, there you have it. That's the latest from the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Cancun. And Margaret Monroe of the Gazette is reporting in the gas hydrates are said to contain more energy than all the other fossil fuels combined and are much cleaner than oil and coal. Global estimates range from, this is a quote, merely jaw-dropping to the truly staggering, according to the United States Department of Energy. Canada is believed to have enough hydrates along its coast to meet the country's energy needs for a couple of hundred years. Takeo Kamaji of Platts is saying that unlike technologies used in the faster than expected development of shale gas in the United States, the technology for extracting usable fuel from Japan's methane hydrates is still in the development stage. If Japan can lower the methane hydrates output costs to the point of offshore production platforms, you know, it could be made competitive against the LNG by bringing it ashore via pipelines to its nearest coast. And Zhuhua News Agency is reporting that buried below the tundra of China's Qinghai Tibet Plateau is a type of frozen natural gas containing methane and ice crystals that could supply energy to China for 90 years. China discovered that large reserve of methane hydrates last September. Last week, the Qinghai province announced that it plans to allow researchers and energy companies to tap the energy source. So that's what China's doing right at the moment. And what about the decarbonization that we're hearing so much about? Well, we're going to talk more about that on this program in the coming weeks as we talk to some of the decarbonization people. We've already had some discussions here. But according to Dilibar Rohawk of the Energy Tribune, he says cheap coal and the wide availability of shale gas make decarbonization in the near future very unlikely. He says even if developed countries committed to switch to renewables, this would be offset by the rising emissions in China. And he says that decarbonization has never been in the interest of developing countries. Western carbon-cutting efforts are mostly a waste of effort and resources, he says. And reporting in, Michael Fletcher, The Washington Post, he says with nearly 15 million Americans out of work and the unemployment rate hovering above 9% for 18 consecutive months, policymakers desperate to stroke job creation have bet heavily on green energy. The Obama administration channeled more than $90 billion of the $814 billion economic stimulus bill into clean energy technology, confident that that investment would grow into the economy's next big thing. Well, the country's the industry's growth has been undercut right now by the simple economic fact that fossil fuels remain cheaper than renewables. And in just a minute or so here, we're going to check in with Dr. Fahmida Chaddawi. She's with the National Science Foundation. She's going to tell about if you've got energy-cutting ideas and green energy projects, how to get funding. So stick around for that. And last month, the Greek Prime Minister, George Papandreou, was visiting France, and he expressed his support for a carbon tax and transaction tax that's advocated by French President Nicolas Sarkozy. Following a working lunch with the French president at the Élysée Palace, Papandreou told the press that he and Sarkozy discussed a new mechanism for the stability of the European Union, which should be financed by carbon tax on Europe level and a tax on financial transactions. The People's Daily reported, with this new mechanism, Europe would have substantial sources of income. And meanwhile, Dalibor Rohawk of the Washington Times says it's clear to him that the goal of cutting carbon emissions through coordinated action by the world's governments is dead. He says, nevertheless, it would be too early to celebrate, as the threat of fear-driven and economically costly climate policies is not gone yet. He says it's merely being transformed into a more subtle but potentially more dangerous agenda. As the new research and development-centered approach gains prominence, he says that we're likely to be in for more government spending and waste. Instead of celebrating the moral and intellectual bankruptcy of the old-style climate alarmism, he says we should be wary of its new form, perhaps subtler, but no less damaging to the economy and the future societies. That was Dalibor Rohawk of the Washington Times. And this out of Texas, a new propane landscaping equipment rebate program is out. That's right. The Propane Council of Texas is providing a $1,000 incentive per propane commercial mower through their Propane Mower Incentive Program. The incentives are for commercial landscapers, school districts, parks departments, that sort of thing. Each company can apply for up to 5 incentives through the program, and the incentive is good for the purchase of original equipment manufacturing factory-built mowers or for the propane commercial mower conversion. All right, with that, we're out of the newsroom, and I'm with our guest. Well, of course, you know, if you've been listening to this program, there's an important conference coming up the 14th and 15th of April in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the state of the site of the big oil spill, and it's going to be on renewable energy, of all things. It's going to be really pretty sensational. And during the next few months or so, we're going to want to talk to some of the people that are going to be presenting there. And one is a Dr. Fahmida Chaddawi, who is with the National Science Foundation, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the point she's going to touch on at the event. Welcome to the program, Dr. Chaddawi.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm going to give a presentation on areas of research funding that are available at the National Science Foundation that can accommodate research projects on green technologies and renewable energy resources and related issues. And because these are, a lot of times these are multidisciplinary areas, meaning they require expertise from various different fields, maybe engineering, computer science, social sciences, public policy, all kinds of things. So a lot of times researchers may not know exactly which areas of NSF they could submit their proposals to. So my talk is basically designed to help people figure out how to navigate NSF system, how to find out where they might fit best, what are some of the most prominent multidisciplinary research programs that NSF has been funding for the last few years, and so on. You can ask me if you need any more details. I haven't prepared my presentation yet, so this is just an overview.
All right, that's quite interesting. But NSF does fund a lot of different things, and so you're going to be explaining to your listeners how they can get funding for sustainable, renewable energy projects that they may have on the table. Is that correct?
Yes, well, I cannot really pinpoint how exactly they can get funding for exact projects. I can only give them general information. And depending on the audience composition, I normally first ask who's in the audience, and depending on what kind of people I have in the audience, I may or may not give some level of details about how NSF is structured, what are its different directorates, how to find people at NSF, how to find similar kinds of things, whether or not they have been funded already by NSF and so on. And then I plan on going into some details about the directorates of engineering, computer science, and social and behavioral sciences, things that I think are related to the large projects that I can imagine on green technologies that involve multiple areas. And then I would like to tell people about how these things are reviewed, what kinds of success probabilities they have. NSF is extremely competitive, and a lot of proposals get declined. And so, answer people's questions about how to go about submitting a proposal. I cannot really help with anything more specific because all NSF projects are peer-reviewed by a number of independent reviewers, and then there are panels convened, and the decisions are taken in those panels inside NSF. And those panels are all confidential. So if people ask me questions, there might be in the audience maybe people with varying levels of knowledge already about NSF. So I will do my best to accommodate that audience that I have and answer questions accordingly.
Will you be able to give us any insight on some of the projects that NSF is interested in partnering with?
NSF does not ever prescribe what projects they're interested in. It's open for all areas of science and engineering, period. So anybody can submit any proposal that they think is a good idea. NSF is different from other agencies in that we sometimes have specific solicitations, but even those are pretty general. So, for example, if somebody is working on green materials, they would most probably apply to the Division of Material Science. And all these programs are open to all kinds of research. And once in a while, there may be a specific solicitation. I don't recall any on green technologies at the moment, but that's not to say that couldn't happen. We have had solicitations specifically on climate change, for example, which is another multidisciplinary research focus. So I will do my best to share with the audience what's going on at this time, or at that time in April, when the time comes, at NSF. And I'll do my best to guide the audience, that part of the audience who's interested in submitting research projects. So now remember, NSF is a fundamental research agency. We have some collaboration with industry, but those are different programs. I will also touch on those when I give my talk.
All right, Dr. Chaudhary, you are normally attached to Louisiana State University, I guess, on a pretty regular basis. How were you recruited to become a program director for the NSF?
Well, my relationship with LSU is that I was a student there. I got my PhD from there.
Oh, okay.
And the professor who was my PhD advisor, Professor Aravina, was the one who originally invited me to give this keynote talk, and unfortunately he passed away a couple of months ago very suddenly.
Mm.
So that's how I am here in terms of giving a talk at this particular conference. I was teaching at UL Lafayette as a professor of electrical and computer engineering, and I had been serving as NSF PI and panelist and reviewer, and I had served as a rotator also for a couple of years. So that's how I eventually ended up getting a permanent job at NSF, and I moved out of UL Lafayette and moved to this area.
Are you originally from India, or what is your native land?
Yeah, I was born in Bangladesh, which is near India, but not quite.
Yes, Bangladesh is on the southern coast, I think, right there on the Indian Ocean, is it?
Yes.
Okay. The Bay of Bengal. Then you came to this country as a young girl?
As a graduate student, actually, at LSU.
I see. And
department, yes, to get my PhD.
And you mentioned just a minute ago that some of the things that NSF is interested in is climate change. Could you? That's a pretty hot subject. There's an awful lot of skeptics out there right now on climate change, especially with the climate gate that occurred about a year ago now, and the skeptics are coming out of the woodwork. Can you enlighten us on climate change?
No, I really cannot, because I am not in that area and I don't know anything about this subject beyond the fact that NSF has a program to fund research in climate change. That's not taking any sides. This just giving funding to people who would like to do more research to find out what's going on. So there is a particular solicitation out. Proposals have come in probably, but I'm not involved with that program, so I don't know any details. I just heard, just like anybody else, I read news items that NSF has a program in climate change. So NSF program officers do not do their own research on these topics. They fund competitive research grants, that's all.
I was more interested in your personal views. Being from Bangladesh, which is very, very low lying, I understand that if there is significant climate change and the ocean levels rise, it could do poorly for the low-lying areas, and that would include Bangladesh. Do you have a personal opinion on climate change?
That's all true, but I'm not here to give any personal opinion. I identified myself as an NSF employee, and everything I say in this interview will be public material that's available. If you want my personal opinion, I have to do a separate interview as a private citizen, which is not what we're doing here.
Oh, okay. Well, I can appreciate that. One thing more before we go, do you have a word of wisdom, your own personal views that you could give for, say, somebody newly starting out in business or graduating and starting a career? Or
Yes, of course. Somebody new, when you say starting out in business, I guess I take that as a very broadly meaning starting out in their own career, because if it's business, we don't fund businesses. We only fund academic research and nonprofit organizations for fundamental research projects. So if somebody is a new PhD getting a job in a faculty job and is planning on doing research and trying to find research funding, this is the place to come if the research is in science and engineering. Science, math, technology, and engineering, STEM fields. Science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Then they should, I'll be more than happy to show people the ropes of NSF, where to go, what to look for, what websites to search, how to navigate, how NSF is structured, and not to get too frustrated if they get declined time and again, because our success rate is about roughly 20% success. So people have to submit, most people have to submit multiple times before they can get funding. But it's a great experience, and people can start out with reviewing proposals for NSF, serve on NSF review panels, come to NSF workshops, get involved with the activities, and so on. That's a great way to enhance your career if the career includes fundamental research in the STEM subjects. That's all I can say.
Well, Dr. Famita Choudhury from the National Science Foundation, very kind of you to be with us today. We really appreciate you taking the moments from your very busy schedule to devote some time to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Okay, remind you to stick around for the second half hour when we have Claudette Reichel is stopping by. She's a professor with LSU, and she's a housing specialist. She's going to tell us about how we can make our existing housing much more energy efficient, and the exciting new things that are happening with new building construction, which is really pretty remarkable stuff. Also, we're going to have our answers from the fountain of useless information. And then at the end of the program, the voice of reason. So stick around.
Okay. As we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all the wisdom of mankind. Whom in the den of strangers will we meet today?
Robert Louis Stevenson. Mediocrity knows nothing higher than itself. But talent, talent instantly recognizes genius.